Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this, I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
Zone Media.
Welcome back to It Could Happen Here and our special two-part series, Irregular Naval Warfare and You, where James and I teach you how you too can challenge the U.S. Navy's dominance of the seas, or at least the coasts, for fun and profit. Actually, today, last episode, we talked about people challenging the U.S. Navy's coastal dominance. Today, we're talking about doing the same thing for the Russian Navy. So that's going to be fun. And, of course, the Navy of Myanmar, which is a bit of a different class from the U.S. and Russian yeah. Navy, but no less interesting.
Yeah, still fun. We'd love to see a boat lose.
Yeah, well, I just like boats going down, you know? I just hate a boat.
Yeah, yeah. Us, the orcas, many... You know,
many such cases.
Yeah.
I'm going to start with Ukraine, and then we're going to throw to James to talk about our friends in Myanmar and how they have repurposed civilian technology and stolen weapons to counter a navy without really having one of their own. But first, Ukraine. In 2014, when the Russian army invaded eastern Ukraine and took Crimea, Ukraine lost a significant portion of its already not that impressive navy. Most of their boats were just taken by Russia, along with a number of sailors who defected. A lot of other sailors fled the region, leaving behind their homes in cities like Sevastopol to continue serving their country in a war that, a decade later, is still ongoing. One of these sailors, who is a Sevastopol native and had to flee his home, possibly forever, in order to continue serving his country, is the current commander of Ukraine's navy, Admiral Nezpapa. He leads a navy that is almost without manned ships, and on paper, it is utterly incapable of challenging Russia's legendary Black Sea Fleet. Since the age of the Tsars, the Black Sea Fleet has been infamous as a pillar of Russian military power. However, also since the age of the Tsars, it's had a nasty tendency to get utterly housed by enemies that should have been able to beat it, right?
Yeah. Not the first time it's taken an unexpected loot.
Yeah, it has a legendary history. That doesn't mean good. There's bad legends out there, you know?
Yeah, it's well known.
Yeah, today that enemy is Ukraine. Since the expanded Russian invasion in 2022, just 2 years, Ukraine has destroyed or badly damaged more than a third of the Black Sea Fleet, despite having no battleships or destroyers in the sea to counter Russian naval power. They have done enough damage to reopen Odessa and at least one other port on the Black Sea to international commerce, which has provided Ukraine with a crucial economic and strategic lifeline. And that's a remarkable achievement, sinking a third of the Black Sea fleet and basically, when you reopen a port, that means that you have taken away naval dominance from a country that has a navy and you don't. That's pretty good stuff. Over the last 2 years, Ukraine had damaged irreparably or sunk seven active landing ships and one landing vessel. I don't know the difference. They fucked up a lot of boats. They have destroyed a submarine with sea-to-ground capability that was docked for repairs. They have sunk a cruiser, the capital ship of the entire Black Sea Fleet, the Moskva. They've also sunk a supply vessel and a handful of patrol boats and missile boats, and a number of other boats have been damaged. That's a significant rate of casualty. Especially when you consider that every actually destroyed vessel, we're looking at a multiple years lead time to replace. You cannot make naval vessels very quickly anymore. Back during the big dub-dub dose, the U.S. did, but nobody really does that anymore. Not with the big ones, at least.
You can't just roll through that.
we were just yeeting aircraft carriers into the sea back then.
Yeah, it's true. It's just farting them out.
It'll take about a week.
it's because Rosie the Riveter was really riveting at a high speed.
She was quite a riveter. So at the start of hostilities, Turkey, which controls access to the Black Sea, forbade any additional military vessels, or at least military vessels of significant size, from entering the area. What this means, this has a significant impact on how well Ukraine strikes work, because even if Russia can replace the losses physically, they can't actually get replacements into the Black Sea easily. They can't sail new shit past the Turks. The Turks are not allowing that right now. So again, this is a situation that has kind of favored the way in which Ukraine has adapted to countering Russian naval dominance. It is possible that at the present rate of attrition, the Black Sea Fleet could be rendered inoperable in less than 2 years. Like, if they keep going at this rate, it's like 18 months or something before there's not really much of a fleet anymore. Now, if Ukraine had accomplished this task with a traditional navy, using standard naval tactics, this would have been an impressive victory, given the disparity in resources between the two nations. But they have done all this with a mix of cruise missiles, many of which are produced in-country, aerial drones, and new bespoke, locally produced suicide drone boats. This irregular naval warfare has been successful enough that one RAND Corporation engineer and analyst, Scott Savitz, described the Black Sea Fleet as a fleet in being. Quote, it represents a potential threat that needs to be vigilantly guarded against, but one that remains in check for now. And I'm going to quote from a New York Times article on the topic to provide a little more context. Ukraine has effectively turned around 10,000 square miles in the western Black Sea off its southern coast into what the military calls a gray zone, where neither side can sail without the threat of attack. James Heapy, Britain's armed forces minister, told a recent security conference in Warsaw that Russia's Black Sea fleet had suffered a functional defeat and contended that the liberation of Ukraine's coastal waters in the Black Sea was every bit as important as the successful counteroffensives on land in Kherson and Kharkiv last year. The classical approach that we studied at military maritime academies does not work now, Admiral Nezpapa said. Therefore, we have to be as flexible as possible and change approaches to planning and implementing work as much as possible. That article is about a year old or so. So the Neptune anti-ship missile is one of the prides of Ukraine's nascent arms industry. Neptune missiles are credited with destroying the Moskva in April of 2022. Ukraine also has access to several Western anti-ship missiles, including the Storm Shadow and Scalp missiles. I believe the Storm Shadow comes from your folks, right, James?
That's a British one.
And these seem to be pretty effective missiles. These are obviously much more advanced. These are modern naval weapons, right? Yeah. These are much more advanced than, for example, the weapons the Houthis have. These are the kind of things that can counter, to some extent, modern anti-missile technology. For an example of kind of how that tends to work, they used a barrage of, I believe it was mostly storm shadows, to rain death on the Crimean port of Sebastopol recently. 7 out of 18 of the missiles fired made it through Russian air defenses, and these damaged or destroyed 4 landing ships in a single strike. And these are sizable naval vessels. This is the most recent attack. Although, after I wrote this, there was another attack on the Kerch Bridge. I'm not really sure how that took place yet. That seems to have shut it down again. But that gives you an idea of like what you actually have to do, how much of these missiles you have to put in the air to get some through. And that's not too bad, right? 18 missiles, 7 get through, 4 ships down. That's a really good rate of return.
Especially when you consider that, like, we were talking in our first episode about how the U.S. is spending significant resources on maintaining defending its carriers, right? Russia does not have the same ability to keep producing munitions.
No.
And so, like, that's a finite resource, right? Their means of defending their ships and defending really anything against missiles are a finite resource. So anytime you can, even if the ship doesn't get sunk, if the ship has to deploy one of these missiles, which it doesn't which the whole country doesn't have very many of, that's still a win.
Now, this is, we're all talking about irregular naval warfare, and then this is not what most people would have considered a traditional naval conflict prior to the expansion of hostilities in Ukraine. However, we are talking, this is very different than the case of the Houthis. Ukraine is a state. It doesn't have a massive arms industry, but it has one, and it has the support of nations with sizable arms industries, right? So we are not talking about this part. We are going to talk about the aspects of Ukrainian irregular naval warfare that are some guys that are hobbyists building shit. This is not that part yet. But I think this information is kind of significant in that it shows the tactical use of anti-ship cruise missiles and their ability to significantly shape an operational environment, even when the country using them has minimal conventional naval assets of their own. It is largely through the use of these missiles that Ukraine has been able to reopen their Black Sea ports. That matters to people seeking to understand both this conflict and the future of unconventional naval warfare. I mean, I guess you could say this is the future of conventional naval warfare, but I think we're still leaning on the unconventional side at the moment, at least in terms of how doctrine is changing as a result of this. So maybe I should update how we're defining this. But for our purposes, as people unlikely to have access to cruise missiles, but significantly likelier to find ourselves waging an unconventional war than having cruise missiles, it's more relevant to look at the new weapon systems Ukraine has developed that have helped them lock down the Black Sea fleet using civilian hobbyists. And this is where we get to drones. Ukraine's conventional aerial drones are a mix of actual military hardware. I'm talking about stuff like the Bayraktar, the Turkish drone, which is like kind of like the Predator, all right? It's like an actual military product. But the majority in terms of numbers of drones that Ukraine is fielding are civilian drones, or at least drones that started out as civilian technology. A lot of these are now built to be military, but they're still based on these designs that started with people hacking and cobbling together civilian drones. And outside of naval stuff, prior to the war, there had been a lot of veterans and hobbyists who were veterans trying to convince the Ukrainian military that it needed to adopt drone warfare on a large scale, the kind of drone warfare that you can do with these less expensive drones. And they received a lot of pushback until the war started. And these guys just took to the field and started fucking murking Russian armed units and infantry and killing generals and shit. And now Ukraine has integrated in a way that everyone is going to follow. Like Ukrainian like battalions have like companies now that are drone assault companies and like line battalions.
Right. And every within infantry, you have like people used or artillery using drones as forward observers.
All over. They have set a goal for this year of producing at least 1 million and ideally more like 2 million drones. And at least from what I read, that looks like very plausible. And most of these are quite small, right? But that doesn't mean obviously ineffective.
I know they buy a lot of their drones in the UK because the UK has consistently kicked itself in the nuts when it comes to like Brexit. Mm-hmm. And so the pound is significantly weaker. And so they're able to get the drones at a cheaper price and then drive them all the way across.
Yeah.
I know people who have done that. I was going to go join them, but never worked it out.
Yeah. And, you know, there are a number of different, like these drones earlier in the war had an easier time being effective and causing casualties on the Russians than later. This is something that, you know, kind of the hoopla and support, which I think is necessary that Ukraine gets, leads some people to discount the degree to which Russian forces have adapted and gotten smarter. And one of the ways in which they've adapted and gotten smarter is in blocking drones and using drones of their own. You know, one of the stories of the last couple of weeks is that Russia has succeeded in carrying out strikes on advanced weapon systems like SAM sites deep in Ukrainian territory. They've extended their kill chain beyond what they used to be capable of, and that's because they've adapted. They're also adapted with less efficacy at blocking drones in attacks on naval vessels. Some of this has been kind of funny. I want to read a quote from a Business Insider article here. Russia is painting silhouettes on naval vessels on land to try and trick Ukraine, which keeps destroying its warships. In an intelligence update on Wednesday, the UK Ministry of Defense said that silhouettes of vessels have also been painted on the side of Ks, probably to confuse the uncrewed aerial vehicle operators. They showed there's some images of this. They don't seem convincing to me. I don't know if I think this is working.
This is great. This is I love this. Like, they have a cardboard navy next.
Yeah, it's very Bugs Bunny.
but not working
as well as Bugs would.
They've more painted like a hole in the side of the cliff face and drones keep crashing into it.
Ukraine keeps throwing drones at it. It's very funny. I mean, obviously, Ukraine just sank like badly damaged four boats. So I don't think I haven't seen evidence that this is working well. Their actual like jamming efforts have been much more successful, right?
Yeah, they always will be on civilian. One of the things that's really interesting compared to Myanmar is that Ukraine tends to rely on modified off-the-shelf civilian drones, right? Your DJIs, yeah, that kind of thing. In Myanmar, because of where a lot of the PDFs are, because, well, they increasingly do control the borders, but they haven't always, they have been making their own drones. It's a group called Federal Wings. You can find them on Telegram, who make their own drones. And I think those seem to be less susceptible. The jammers that the SAC that the Tatmadaw has are Chinese made. They're like jammer rifles. You see them all the time in captured weapon caches, but they don't seem to be having as much impact on these homemade drones, which is really interesting.
Yeah, yeah. And it's, you know, I've mentioned a couple of times, we're doing this in part because the odds that people listening might be involved in an irregular conflict are not zero. You know, yeah, what I think about when I say that is not that there's high odds for any individual person finding themselves in that situation, but there is, given the number of people who listen to this podcast, probably someone who is not currently involved in a conflict that will find themselves that way in the future. And I base that in part on the fact that all of our friends in Myanmar who are currently fighting a war were a couple of years ago delivery drivers and, you know, playing PUBG online and not really thinking they would wind up as insurgents.
Yeah, I've spoken to a number of people who are currently fighting, not in Myanmar, who have listened to our Myanmar podcast and realized the capacity of 3D printing to be very useful. And so, like, even in that sense, it's already happening. But no one in Myanmar... You know, they, like many of them said, their entire combat experience was playing PUBG. And now they are murking ships.
Yeah. So anyway, it bears thinking about this stuff. And this brings me back to Ukraine's irregular drone warfare units, which, again, a lot of these guys started out as civilian enthusiasts who responded to the outbreak, or at least expansion of hostilities, by expanding their hobby into a real-world military effort that had a real-world effect. Civilian drones were crucial in the Battle of Kyiv, allowing Ukraine to do severe damage to that massive Russian armored column heading towards the city, and providing intel that led to the assassination of multiple general-level officers. So it is perhaps not surprising that Ukraine looked to the same group of volunteer hobbyists when it came time to expand their naval arsenal. And there's a really good article I found in CNN by Sebastian Shukla, Alex Markot, and Daria Tarasova. And I actually want to give you the title of this article. Yeah, I'll try to throw this in the show notes. Is Exclusive Rare Access to Ukraine's Sea Drones, Part of Ukraine's Fight Back in the Black Sea. Haven't really seen the word fight back used that way, but there you go. So I'm going to read a quote from that article. A government-linked Ukrainian fundraising organization called United 24 has sourced money from companies and individuals all around the world, pooling funds to disperse it to a variety of developers and initiatives from defense to soccer matches. The entire outfit is very security-conscious, insisting on strict guidelines on filming and revealing identities. Those who CNN met with declined to give their full names or even their ranks within Ukraine's armed forces. On a creaky wooden jetty, a camouflaged sea drone pilot says he wants to go by Shark. In front of him is a long black hard-shell briefcase. He unveils a bespoke multi-screened mission control, essentially an elaborate gaming center, complete with levers, joysticks, a monitor, and buttons that have covers over switches that shouldn't accidentally be knocked, with labels like BLAST. The developer of the drone, who asked to remain anonymous, said their work on sea drones only began once the war started. It was very important because we did not have many forces to resist the maritime state, Russia, and we needed to develop something of our own because we didn't have the existing capabilities. So again, these are hobbyist design. I mean, this guy's not really a hobbyist anymore, but that's how he started. He's only not a hobbyist because the military recognized the value of what he was doing. And the current iterations of this sea drone weigh a little over 2,000 pounds with an explosive 661-pound payload, a 500-mile range, and a max speed of 50 miles per hour. That is a significant weapon system. Yeah. Multiple sea drones have been used to strike Russian assets in the Black Sea, and drones were involved in a successful attack that severely damaged the Kerch Bridge last July, rendering it impassable until September. So these have had a real battlefield effect, and they probably will continue to do so. The developer of these drones told CNN, "These drones are a completely Ukrainian production. They are designed, drawn, and tested here. It's our own production of hulls, electronics, and software. More than 50% of the production of equipment is here in Ukraine." And that's really significant because... You know, I think we're all aware of the difficulty Ukraine has had getting weaponry lately from the West as a result of fucking around in Congress. And so it is a necessity for them to be able to develop weapon systems like this that can interdict and counteract more advanced and expensive weapon systems and can be produced indigenously. You know, I don't think we have seen a mass suicide boat attack. I'm interested in what happens when we do, like with more significant numbers than we've seen deployed. I kind of wonder the degree to which the Russians have gotten good at spotting this stuff. I've come across at least a couple of stories of these boats likely destroyed on approach. So they certainly don't always work, or even a majority of the time. But given the cost of these things, they don't have to get through the majority of the time
for it to
be very much worth it, right? Now, in that interview with the New York Times, Admiral Nezhpapa cautioned that Ukraine is still outgunned in the Black Sea, even though the Russians no longer have supremacy. They still have air superiority. They are still able to launch from the sea long-range missiles at Ukrainian targets, including civilian targets. So this is not, again, a situation that should be portrayed as them having their own way. Their ability to kind of interdict the sea has been, the primary effects of it have been, number one, the reopening of trade in the Black Sea. And earlier in the war, by locking down the ability of these landing ships to put more troops on ground and by doing damage to the Kerch Bridge, they were able to slow Russian reinforcements and Russian materiel from entering the war zone in order to, and this aided in some of the advances, particularly in like areas like Kherson. At this moment, the situation has changed because, again, the Russians aren't just kind of like sitting around doing the same thing over and over again, or at least not always. And we don't tend to talk as much about successes on the Russian side of things, but that is an important part of the story. And one of the things the Russians have done is kind of acknowledge that the Black Sea fleet may not be a fleet in being forever, and certainly cannot be relied upon to handle everything they initially thought it would handle. And so Russian engineers spent a significant period of time building a sizable new railroad that connects Rostov in southern Russia to Mariupol in occupied southern Ukraine. This has allowed them to get high volume shipments into the area and supply troops to the area along Ukraine's southern front without relying on that bridge or relying on naval landings, right? So the fact that Ukraine has been able to take out 4 landing ships recently is good. That's a win for Ukraine. It reduces Russian capability, but it does not have the same effect that it would have had, for example, 2 years earlier, right?
Yeah.
Because Russia has also evolved. And among other things, railroads are a lot easier or a lot harder to destroy, to like take out, right? It's easy to damage a railroad, but they're easy to fix. It's not, it doesn't take a lot to get some guys over to fix a damaged sunk of railroad. Fixing a bridge that's been blown up or a sunk boat is a lot harder.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and there are people within Russia even who are sabotaging railroads. But as you say, it's like it's very high stakes for them, and it's relatively low cost for the Russian state to fix that stuff. So, like, it's not as effective.
Yeah, but I think this gives you an idea of kind of like what we're looking at when we look at this kind of ongoing irregular conflict is the side that does not have access to a functional navy, not able to interdict or destroy fleets, but able to stop them from dominating the coast. And when you can stop them from dominating the coast, you have effectively denied them terrain that they can act in without being countered. And you have also denied them from stopping you from acting in that same terrain. Even if you don't have total safety in that area, that opens up the operational possibilities substantially. And this is something that I kind of don't think is going to get put back in the bag, even if some of these Star Wars-ass weapon systems do come out in the near future. You know, maybe that'll have an impact if in the immediate term on people like the Houthis, but I don't think that it really will on, for example, what Ukraine's doing, right?
Like Russia can't keep up with getting decent small arms, body armor, grenades and shit. Like there's no way it's going to implement some kind of massive Star Wars system over its navy. Not right now, not in the middle of a conflict that it's struggling to supply.
Yep. You know what? Here's an ad break.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Me. Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this, I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S. That's over 15 million people by the end of this year, equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/news. That's LifeLock.com/news to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
All right, we're back, and we are traveling around the world. Spin your little globe in your head and look for Myanmar, which is, of course, in Asia. Now, I'm talking about two different, I guess, anti-ship sabotage or attack, or two different ways that ships have been sunk in Myanmar. I'll start with the first one, which is undoubtedly the flashiest, just because it's fun. So a ship in the port of Yangon about a month ago, so we're recording on the 20th, it's about the 1st of March, it was in the river, in the river in Yangon, right? And it was allegedly carrying jet fuel. Now, if you follow Burmese activists, people in the Burmese freedom movement, one of their demands for a long time has been to stop supplying the junta with jet fuel, which would in turn stop it being able to bomb villages, schools, civilians, PDF formations, just about anyone in the country. It's bombed at some point in the last couple of years. And they haven't been successful, right? They haven't been able to stop the supply of jet fuel coming to the junta. So they've taken it into their own hands. And what they did on the 1st of March was that they snuck onto a boat. This is the story from the Burmese National Unity Government's Ministry of Defense, anyway. Combat divers snuck onto this boat, planted a kilogram of TNT, or a charge equivalent to a kilogram of TNT. Robert and I have both spoken to people who make explosives in Myanmar, so we definitely know the PDF has access to a range of explosives.
Yeah,
they set it on a 5-hour fuse, and it blew up in the middle of the night. There's definitely footage of the ship on fire having blown up. Now, this is pretty remarkable for a number of reasons. Like, this is like why the United States has units like the Navy SEALs, right? Like the higher speed guys, because it is not easy to scuba dive across a harbor, climb onto a ship, set an explosive charge without being detected, and then leave that ship and have the charge go off and sink the ship without you being compromised, without the charge itself being compromised and the ship being saved, right? This is why there are special units within the U.S. military. Now, the PDF very obviously did not have combat divers 2 years ago. I was looking into hobby scuba diving in Yangon. The rivers in that area are extremely muddy and visibility is very low. So the people who you find diving in that area are not so much like hobby scuba divers or free divers, but they're salvage divers. There's a whole little industry of people, and these people are diving in equipment that I would not consider safe or reliable. It's clamping an air hose in between your teeth and diving down and trying to find. There's a large deposit of coal in one of the rivers in Yangon because of a ship that sunk. There's, of course, copper, which everyone all around the world, including the Viet Cong in San Tee, are stealing copper. There's iron, right? So these people are diving down and trying to collect scrap and sell that for whatever minimal amount they can, right? It's an extremely dangerous and extremely low income. Like it's one of the sort of really high risk, low reward jobs that you get in economies where people are really struggling to make ends meet, right? So those are the only divers I can find evidence of in Yangon. I don't think it was them who did this because you have to have a boat above you with a pump if you're diving with a rubber hose in your teeth, right? So it seems like somebody they said it was a Yangon PDF. That's who they attribute it to. So that would be one of these. It would likely be an underground group within the PDF, right? Some people living in the city who were able to sneak onto this boat, set a charge, and blow it up. And they would also have to have intelligence at the boat, where it was, what it was carrying, etc. So it's a pretty daring mission. This is the first one like this we've seen, and we haven't seen anything since. But it's of course possible that this is a story that we're being told. In fact, they had like someone undercover on the ship, right? Or like they had some other means of getting this charge onto the ship. But one way or another, they managed to blow up the ship carrying fuel, which is a significant detriment to the Junta, right? That's how they get most of their shit. It's not over land, especially with
terrain there is just absolutely, like even with modern technology, difficult to get significant amounts of shit through.
They're resupplying some of their outposts that are 10 miles from a town with helicopters right now. Like, A, the terrain is burly, and B, they don't have, the PDF has denied them access. Like, any time they send out a convoy, it gets attacked. So sending out, plus, you know, their land border crossings are increasingly falling into the hands of the PDFs and the EROs. So the getting stuff through the ocean is one of the ways that they can still get stuff. And if this keeps happening, then they will make that more expensive for them. And they're not exactly a wealthy hunter, even though I guess Min Aung Hlaing just made himself an Air Force One recently. I was just looking at it today.
That's good. He's got himself
two luxury. Yeah. They called it dictator class. Like he's upgraded from president class to dictator class.
Yeah.
Yes, he has. Mm-hmm. In many ways. So yeah, that's one way that the PDF has been blowing up ships in the Yangon River. Robert, do you know who else has been blowing up ships in Yangon?
Well, we are sponsored entirely by the British Navy circa the mid-1800s, so I would guess them.
That's right, yep. Uh-huh. It's, lots of repressed feelings and blowing up ships.
A lot of cabin boys with deep trauma. Anyway, here's ads.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this, I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
Now I'd like to introduce you to Meaningful Beauty, the famed skincare brand created by iconic supermodel Cindy Crawford. It's her secret to absolutely gorgeous skin. Meaningful Beauty makes powerful and effective skincare simple, and it's loved by millions of women. It's formulated for all ages and all skin tones and types, and it's designed to work as a complete skincare system, leaving your skin feeling soft, smooth, and nourished. I recommend starting with Cindy's full regimen, which contains all five of her best-selling products, including the amazing Youth Activating Melanin
Melon Serum. This next generation serum has the power of melon leaf stem cell technology. It's melon leaf stem cells encapsulated for freshness and released onto the skin to support a visible reduction in the appearance of wrinkles. With thousands of glowing five-star reviews, why not give it a try? Subscribe today and you can get the amazing Meaningful Beauty System for just $49.95. That includes our introductory five-piece system, free gifts, free shipping, and a 60-day money-back guarantee. All that available at MeaningfulBeauty.com.
All right, we're back. We hope you enjoyed that ad pivot, one of our best ones yet. And we're talking about the Arakan army now. So the Arakan army, not to be confused with the Arakan Rohingya Salvation Army, different group. Arakan is a name of what is now Rakhine State before it was colonized by the Burmese. That was, I think Arakan was a king before it was colonized by the Burmese. So that's what that refers to. It's a geographical appellation rather than like necessarily an ethnic one. The Rakhine would be the ethnic group. So what the AA have done is sunk, I think, at least four junta ships now. Now, most of these ships are kind of, they're like the, they look like big Higgins boats. They're like landing craft or like car ferries, like flat bottom with a bow that goes down, right? I rode around a lot in the Marshall Islands in little landing craft like that because they can get them in. They don't have like docks, so they can just ride that right up to the beach and then drop the front and off you go. And they use them a lot. The junta doesn't have like per se marines, so they don't have maritime infantry, but they use them to transport their regular army around, right? And they use them to transport them upriver. They also use them a lot in Rakhine State to shell AA positions and any townships that they've decided they want to wipe off the map and kill all the people in, right? So these boats have been a real like thorn in the side of the Arakan army after Operation 1027. When they joined with two other groups to form the Three Brotherhood Alliance and launch attacks on the junta all over Myanmar. And so what they've been doing, it appears, is using underwater mines to sink these ships, which is interesting, right? Like I guess the mines are like a very old technology, right? Like it's probably 100 years plus that underwater mines have existed. It seems the way that, like, the reason they're able to get away with using what is a relatively dated technology is because the junta just doesn't expect to encounter anything, right? And so has not equipped its ships as such. Like, they do have stuff like submarines, but that's not what's getting sunk. What's getting sunk are these big kind of landing craft riverboats. And it seems that they're using mines, and then once they disable the ship, they're then attacking it with small boats, small arms, like indirect fire, mortars, and stuff.
Yeah.
I saw one post that suggested they'd use, which is pretty cool if they did. The Burmese military has these like tank destroyers, self-propelled. It's a tank. It's a tank is what it is. And they've captured, the AA has captured a number of these, right? And I've seen suggestions that they're using some of these on, like they just set up an ambush along the banks of the river, right? And as the ship comes in, they can maybe disable it with a mine and then attack it with those. But there are videos online, you can find them, of the AA sinking these ships. And then they've done some amazing drone photography of like they then like staged their units on the ships, like all saluting the drone, and they had the Arakan army flags, and they're actually really cool photos of them taking these ships. But again, like I think this might be the first sinking of a Burmese naval ship since since independence from Britain. Like I can't think that they really haven't played much of a role at all in its conflicts with the EROs, aside as from like basically kind of just shelling places when they want to do that. But there's never really been any significant opposition to them, and that's changed now. They have to, obviously, just like everywhere else, watch out for drones, right? Drones have been used to a massive extent in Myanmar. And like the AA doesn't have as many like associated PDFs. I haven't seen them doing as much of the drone stuff as the PDFs. The PDFs tend to be like the more urban folks, right? The younger folks, the Gen Z folks that we've spoken about before. And a lot of them have been very savvy with their use of drones. Like I said, you can look up Federal Wings and you can see them dropping bombs with drones on all kinds of stuff with their heavy metal soundtracks that they like. But it wasn't even drones here. It's pretty simple. It was just mines. So they do love mines in Myanmar. There's a lot of mines all over that country. But in this case, these, I guess, massive mines in the rivers, given that the junta is the only only entities sending big boats up and down, you could set them at a certain depth where these small boats wouldn't hit them, and eventually one of the hunter boats is going to hit them, I guess. And so it's pretty basic technology, but it's still a massive step forward in terms of like a place where the state had complete impunity, it now doesn't, right? They can't just cruise up and down these rivers shelling people. They were actually using some of the ships to evacuate soldiers and their families from a position. The soldiers, they were trying to like, rather than surrendering, they were trying to evacuate them and move them to somewhere else. The AA asked them to surrender and they didn't. They tried to evacuate them. So then they mined the ships and took those out. I think the hunter has like tried to spin this as like the AA is attacking civilians. But I think a Burmese Navy ship with a Burmese Navy flag, when those ships have just been shelling you, seems like a legitimate target to me. I think it's very hard. It's a hunter who put children on one of their naval ships rather than the AA who attacked the ship because it had children. You can hear in one of the things, you can hear the AA are like attacking the ship in small boats and they're shouting like there are children on board, and you can hear them acknowledging it. And there are videos of the AA rescuing people who jumped overboard, rescuing them from the river. And then, like, I guess they're just held as POWs.
Cool. But,
yeah, it's cool. It's interesting. Obviously, not many of us have access to underwater mines, but, you know, maybe in a fictional future we might.
Yeah. Well, there you go, folks. This has been Irregular Naval Warfare and You, a podcast about irregular naval warfare and you.
Yeah. Send us your videos of yourselves engaging in irregular naval warfare.
Yeah, absolutely. Go out there. Look, how about this? Every listener, go out and sink one naval vessel, you know? Mm-hmm. Doesn't
just
matter
a boat.
Who's. Just any boat. Go sink a boat. Any boat.
Mm-hmm.
Go,
yeah.
go take
you see
out a
fucking
boat.
Super yacht?
Knock it out. You see a dinghy? Take that fucker out. People kayaking? Fuck them up, you know?
Banana boat?
Absolutely, a banana boat, for sure. Yeah. One of those weird duck boat car things that they have in some cities.
Actually, you know what?
You don't need to do anything with that. That'll kill everybody on board on its own. Those things are death traps.
Yeah. Just pray for those people.
Yeah.
But any other boat, yeah. You see a donut, you know, behind a speedboat.
Oh, yeah. Merc it. Anyway, everybody, go away.
It Could Happen Here is a production of Cool Zone Media. For more podcasts from Cool Zone Media, visit our website, coolzonemedia.com, or check us out on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. You can find sources for It Could Happen Here updated monthly at coolzonemedia.com/sources. Thanks for listening.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.